Now, this discourse that we're going to be exploring today is actually, it was said for the next Sedra, after the discourse that we studied last week was a discourse for Yitro, and this is one for Mishpatim. And it has a very similar theme, and it's intriguing that I didn't find any direct reference to last week's discourse. The theme is somewhat similar, and it's a kind of variation on a theme. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, that's Ali.
And here we have, you see, last week the Torah reading was Yitro. And what happens in Yitro is the giving of the Ten Commandments. Then at the end of Sedra Yitro, it describes Moses going up the mountain. And that was the subject of last week's Sedra. Then Mishpatim gives a kind of overview of a certain dimension of Torah thought, which are the sort of the laws between man and man to a very great extent, Mishpatim, laws relating to human activities. And in fact, the sections of the Talmud, Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, and so on, they relate very closely to the Sedra that we have, this Mishpatim Sedra. And then at the end of the Sedra, it again tells us about Moses going up the mountain. And so that's what we are looking at here. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, God said to Moses, Ale elai ha'ara, come up to me, ascend to me up the mountain, v'hei yesham, and be there with me, be there. And I'll give you the tablets of stone. That's going to be the Ten Commandments. The Torah and the commandments, which I've written to teach them, to teach the people. And then we have Moshe and Joshua, his attendant, going up. And Moshe went up El Ha'alakim to the mountain of God. And then he says to the elders, to the elders, he said, you stay here until we come back to you. And there's Aaron and Hur. Anyone has a problem should approach that. And then Moshe went up the mountain, Vayal Moshe El Ha. Moses went up the mountain, Vayachas he'anan et ha'ha, and the cloud covered the mountain. Vayishkon kvod Hashem el al ha'sinai, the glory of Hashem dwelt on Mount Sinai. Vayachaseyu he'anan sheshet yamim, and the cloud covered it for 6 days. Vayikra el Moshe b'yom ha'shvi'i, and God called to Moses on the seventh day, mitoch ha'anan, from the midst of the cloud. U'mare kvod Hashem ke'esh ochelet, and the appearance of the glory of God was like consuming fire, b'rosh ha'har, on the head of the mountain, le'enei b'nei Yisrael, to the eyes of the Jewish people. Vayavo Moshe betoch ha'anan, and Moses came, he went into the cloud. Vayal el ha'ar, and he went up the mountain. Vayhi Moshe ba'ar, Moses was on the mountain, 40 yom, 40 days, ve'arba'im laila, and 40 nights. Now, I'm going to see if we can get the Rashi commentary over here. One second. So here, Moses came into the midst of the cloud, and Rashi said, this cloud was thick like smoke, and God made a path for Moses through it. right? He's quoting from the Talmud. So that is the that's the text that the discourse is focusing on. Moses going, ascending the mountain through this thick cloud. And Rashi is saying the cloud was thick like smoke and God made a path for Moses through it. Now, that is very similar to what we had at the end of Sedra Yitro, which also spoke about Moses going in the cloud and there were three dimensions and a whole discussion. And the discourse is taking a kind of a different route. It is also talking about Moses going into the cloud and what the cloud or the smoke and what the smoke signifies and how that relates to each one of us in our personal lives. But I suppose there's points of contact, but really it's like variations on a theme. So it was one, and even though this is, it's the following week, but it's looking at it in a slightly different way. And so that's what we're going to be exploring together. So let me see if I can find the melody of the discourse, which... Right. Are you able to see the discourse? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. Right. So this was said, Parshat Mishpatim, which like this Shabbat is blessing the month of the first Adar. And it was that was in 1965. Vayavo Moshe betoche anan. Moses went into the cloud, as we just read. Uferish Rashi, and Rashi explained, Anan ze kemin ashan hu. This cloud is like smoke. Va'asa lo hakadosh baruch hu l'moshe, and God made for Moses shvil, a path betocho in the midst of the smoke. V'hu midivrei ha'gmara b'yoma, and that is from tractate Yoma. Yoma is the tractate which is about Yom Kippur. Ne'emar kan betoch. It says in one verse, like you can see the word betoch, Moses came betoch, in the midst of the cloud. Ve'ne'emar la'alan betoch. And then it says in another place, it also says betoch, using the same phraseology. And so let me just see if I can track this down. Sorry. In Beshalach, when it's talking about the splitting of the Red Sea, it says there, Vayavo b'nei Yisrael b'toch hayam b'yabasha. The Israelites, the children of Israel, went into, like this, b'toch, into the sea on dry land. Now, ma'la lanshvil, just as in the case of the splitting of the sea, there was a path, there's this idea that the Jewish people went on a path through the water. In fact, there's a midrash that they went through 12 paths, one for each tribe. As it says, the water was for them like a wall. So they were walking on a path with like two walls on either side. Afkan shvil, so too from the word betoch, which is used about the splitting of the sea there, but the same word is used here. So it means there was a kind of pathway through the smoke. Okay, we can understand that. So there's a pathway through the smoke for Moses, and the way the Talmud deduces this is from the use of a similar word, betoch, in two different places in the Torah, one here and one talking about going through the sea and the idea that there's a path through the sea. Now comes a whole discussion about smoke, cloud, and fire. Vihine. And Vihine, behold. In Yan HaAshan, the idea of this smoke, she'anan zeh kemin ashanu, that as Rashi told us, this cloud is really a kind of smoke, or seems like smoke. That's a very interesting issue. Is it really smoke, or is it really cloud? That relates when we translate this whole, what might seem a rather abstract or remote discussion, like, you know, talking about interpretation of terms in the Torah, about things that happened thousands of years ago. But when we come to at the later in the discourse, it applies it all to our lives today. So we'll see then that the question whether it's really smoke or it's actually clouds makes a big difference. So it's cloud, but it looks like smoke. Now, the thing about smoke, Ba agidei esh. Smoke is a product generally of fire. Aval lo mitzad ha'esh levada. It's not just because of the fire by itself. Ki im ka'asher esh soref u'mechale ez davar. It's when the fire burns and consumes something. O k'mo shekatuv lifnei zeh, as it said just before, one of the verses we read, u'mare kvod Hashem, the image of the glory of God, ke'esh ochelet, was like a consuming fire, b'rosh ha'ha, at the top of the mountain. Hinei mischeifat v'chilyon ha'davar, from the burning, from the consuming of something, ha'nischaf be'esh, which is being burnt in fire, yotzeh ha'sham, from that comes out smoke, right? Fire burns something, and that...
The tin of the light, thanks.
You're listening.
I'm listening, but I don't need the light on.
Okay. See you.
See you. Okay. Thank you, Yitzhak.
So the smoke comes from the burning thing. Omnam, however, at an earlier verse, b'matan Torah, when we're talking about the giving of the Torah, k'tiv, it says there, Vaha Sinai Ashan Kulo, Mount Sinai was completely smoking. Mipnei Asher Yarad Alav Hashem Ba'esh, because God descended on it in fire. Now that is just before hold on. Looking at this verse. 9, 9, So that is in Yitro. And it is just before the actual giving of the Torah. In the next few lines will be the Ten Commandments. And just before that, it says Mount Sinai was smoking because Hashem descended on it in fire. And the smoke went up like the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mountain was shaking, and there was the sound of a shofar. This whole very dramatic lead up to the giving of the Ten Commandments. So there, the Rebbe points out, it says Eish Stam, it just says fire. It doesn't say Velo Eish Ochelet, it doesn't say a consuming fire. In our verse at the end of Mishpatim, there's a consuming fire. But the verse which is just before the giving of the Torah, before the Decalogue, before the Ten Commandments, it just says fire. Ukafi Shemadayek, as the previous Rebbe points out, Shemisignon Lushona Katuv Mashma, that from the style of the way this is written, Shaha'esh ba'atzmo hu sibata asham. That when we're talking about that earlier verse, it's the fire itself which seems to be the reason for the smoke. Avshe be'emet, even though in truth, na'asa asham, where does the smoke come from? Me'hadavar nisraf, from the thing which is burning. And not usually from the fire itself. Fire burns something, and it's because of the thing that is being burned that the smoke comes. And the previous Rebbe explains in a discourse. Now you see, last week, the discourse that we were learning, which was said the week before, was focusing on a discourse by Rabbi Shneur Zalman and the Tzemach Tzedek, and it was a manuscript which hadn't yet been printed. Here the Rebbe is focusing on a different discourse by the previous Rebbe, which he said in 1948, a discourse he said in America. He'd already left Europe, it was the end, the war ended, thank God. And the previous Rebbe was in America, and in 1948, he said a discourse he also said a similar discourse actually during the war, 1941, also, so there are a number of discourses, but they're by the previous Rebbe. And the previous Rebbe points out that when we say that generally the fire burns, the smoke comes from a fire, because of the thing that's being burned, that applies whether we're speaking about physical fire, the fire below, or spiritual fire. Now you see, everything that is around us in existence is really a kind of a metaphor for something which is higher. One way of understanding our lives, that our lives are a kind of a map. Now, if you consider a map, nowadays everyone has mobile phones or smartphones, and so maps are, many people don't see a real physical map. But if you imagine a map, like drawn on paper with different colors showing rivers and hills and things like that, and where there's vegetation and where there's houses and a city, so the drawing on the map is a representation of something which is beyond the map, which is in the reality of life, that there is a city, there is a road, there's a river, there's a mountain, there's a lake. And you have to be able to interpret the lines and the symbols on the map in order to understand what it's actually talking about in real terms. Now, our lives, which seem very real to us, are really a kind of map to a higher spiritual realm. In fact, there's a beautiful teaching, a discourse by the second Lubavitcher Rebbe. So he says, our lives are a kind of map to a higher spiritual realm. And then when you look at that higher spiritual realm, it itself is a map to a realm which is even higher. And then when you look, you focus on that higher realm, it itself is a map to something which is infinitely beyond. So you're going like orders of infinity beyond, higher and higher. And at a lower level, each one is a map to the level beyond it. So therefore, here where we're speaking about fire, and we're talking about how fire burns, so the imagery of fire and the way that fire burns, this is something that resounds all the way through the spiritual dimensions of existence and beyond existence. Now, given that we have the idea that generally when fire burns, it produces smoke from the thing that is being consumed, the Rebbe asked the question, v'lichaora, now, first sign, haribahasinai lo hayu ilanot odishayim. On Mount Sinai, there were neither trees, nor vegetation, v'asavim, nor grasslands, shemischefatan yiyah ashan, from burning which, would be the smoke. Ki ha-Sinai hu ha-shel avanim, because Mount Sinai is a mountain of rocks. The rocks are not going to burn in the normal way that, let's say, a forest would burn, a forest fire or grassland. The rocks don't burn in that kind of way. So where is the smoke coming from? Umosif, and he adds, that's the previous Rebbe, this is from the previous Rebbe's discourse. The dayek b'mashe katuv, God descended, it says, God descended on the mountain in fire. Now, descending in fire, the idea of fire descending is a very unusual idea. Halo al piateva, according to the nature, shehitbia hakadosh baruch hu b'nivraim, which God implanted in created things. Hineteva ha'esh, the nature of fire, who aliyah is to go upwards, right? Fire burns upwards. So unless elaim ken yeshno davar gashmi, unless there's a physical thing, shebo nechaz ha'esh v'nishalemata, that the fire can cling, so to speak, to this physical thing, and then the fire remains below. U'mipnei ma hayakan hefach tibo. So why in this instance was the fire operating in the opposite way to its nature? Because the fire is burning downwards. It's a fire which descends on the mountain. And the previous Rebbe explained, the hinei b'matan Torah nitgala pnimiyut hakavana. At the giving of the Torah, there was revealed the inner intention, the b'riyat ha'olam, of the creation of the world, shenivra al pi ha'teva, the world was created according to, or including nature, shehitbia hakadosh baruch hu ba'arba yesodot, nature which God invested in the four elements, which are fire, air, earth and water, over domem tzomea chay medaber, and in the four realms of existence, the inanimate realm, like the rocks, tzomea, the vegetable realm, the animal realm, and the human realm, ashal pi haTorah, which according to Torah, hinezot hi avodat haAdam, the service of man is, and woman, l'shanot tivo, to change one's nature, v'teva ha'olam, and the nature of the world, la'asotam machon l'shifto yitbarech, to make them, one's own being and the world around one, machon l'shifto, a dwelling for God to dwell in, v'hu yitbarech ha'matfil, and God begins, l'horot, teaching us, b'shinui teva abriya, by changing the nature of existence, of the created world. I think this is a fascinating idea. I want to stop sharing the screen for a moment, just to be able to speak to you more directly. It's a very incredible idea that here we have the purpose of existence, that there is implanted in us and in existence around us a certain quality, a certain natural quality. And the challenge for us is somehow to work on ourselves so that we change our nature. We refine our nature. There are many different kinds of words which are used. We elevate our nature. We transform our nature in some way. And also that the nature of existence around us is also transformed. And so that is a... I think that's a very crucial concept that we just read. Would anyone like to comment on that? Rabbi Lou, would you like to say something about that?
I'm just coming in here yet. I'm not ready yet.
Okay.
I'm listening.
Okay.
Hard to be a good listener.
All right, any comment from anyone else? Okay, so let's go back to the text. I find this a very interesting sort of general statement. What it contrasts with, sorry, I'm going to stop sharing again. What it contrasts with is the idea that we should simply express our nature, which is quite a current concept in Western society. People have this aspect of their nature, that aspect of their nature. Let's just express our nature. Let's just be what we feel like being and enjoy our nature. Here, there's something else that's being said. Our nature might be something, it's something which can be elevated. It's something that can be brought to a higher level. Then can come an argument, you know, can one really elevate one's nature? Is one able to, you know, is it just for appearances that a person appears to elevate their nature? But the Hasidic goal is to elevate one's nature, and it admits, Hasidic teachings admit, that that's very hard. And very often we are stuck, or we seem to be stuck, with our nature the way that it originally is. And it's only with the kind of appearances that we can make it look different. But if that's all that we work on those differences, those apparent differences, the apparent nature, the apparent quality of our being. Reminds me of a story which is said about Maimonides, the Rambam. Right? Maimonides was this great sage, Torah sage, philosopher, and doctor living about in the end of the 12th century. Active in Egypt. And there was a lot of, and he was at the court of the Sultan, and he was the doctor of the Sultan. And there was a lot of opposition to him at the court. So one day, one of the rival doctors told the Sultan, I've done a wonderful thing. I bet no one else, that's a Jew, Moses Maimonides, he won't be able to do this. The Sultan said, yes, and what is it you can do? I have trained cats to be absolutely like human beings. They can act like waiters. They're the most wonderful thing. So the Sultan said, really? Oh, well, let's make a whole display and we'll all come along and see it. And the Rambam, Maimonides, is also invited, and there they all are, and there are these cats, and the cats are standing up on their hind legs. And, you know, cats look very sleek. You know, maybe they were black cats, and, you know, they looked extremely smart, and they were acting like waiters and waitresses at some banquet. And the Sultan's so impressed. Look at that. He's got these cats to act like human beings. Isn't it wonderful? So the Rambam reaches into his pocket and takes out a mouse. And he throws the mouse in among the cats. And immediately they all become cats. And they all jump on the mouse. The plates go flying. No more civilization. Well, unfortunately, the moral of the story is we human beings are just like that as well. And Lord of the Flies was written after the Holocaust and the Second World War in general as a kind of explanation of the way in which humanity can descend into horror in a very easy moment. So in other words, our civilization is a kind of veneer, and underneath is the violent passion of the cat or the animal, whatever it might be. So if people could mute their phones, I'd be very grateful. That's
You're going to have to mute her yourself, I think.
Let me just...
She's incapacitated.
Right, okay. Now... So that's our service. To change nature, our nature, and to change the nature of the world to make it a dwelling for the divine. So let's go a bit further.
If I may interject, Rabbi, you were talking about Lord of the Flies and about how that is the undercurrent of the animal self and how, you know, our society is a veneer. And you were really getting onto something, and then the snoring started. So I was just wondering if you could perhaps just finish off that thought, if you can record it at all. Because you were really getting into something, and then so if you wouldn't mind.
Well, it's
I just felt there was more to explore there, because I just found it weird that you brought up Lord of the Flies, because I've actually had that conversation recently with a few people over the last few months. And we were talking. We were analysing and thinking about it from a modern day sense. We were saying about how it's, in a sense, it's a bit like a popularity contest, and it's also trying to teach. Well, not teach, but show what happens when it's ruled by might, instead of necessarily ruling by thought and intelligence. And that's, I think, what happens when things start going awry. Maybe we're going off topic. I just wanted to see whether if there was more to explore there, but if you feel like you don't have it at the moment.
Well, I mean, obviously there's more, you know, but I think if we try to focus on what the discourse is saying, it's got a very interesting message about this whole process.
So the answer's in the discourse, in that case, I'll be quiet.
No, by all means, let's see in what way the discourse actually answers. I'm not quite sure how your discussion ended off, you know, in your discussion of Lord of the Flies and so on. But what...
It didn't, so that's why I'm thinking that this discourse will have the answer. Well, I've been thinking about it recently. It's been on my mind, so I found it intriguing that you brought it up.
Well, so let's see. Let's see what happens as we go through the book. Okay, so I'm going to share the... So now we're up to the words V'lachein. That's on line 6 of page Vav in this PDF of this discourse. V'lachein, and therefore... Hinei ha-Sinai, therefore Mount Sinai, imei yoto evanim, even though it was stones, it was rocks. And in general, you wouldn't expect it to be burnt by flames burning on the rocks, producing smoke. Nonetheless, it was pouring smoke, which in a sense is beyond the nature of the mountain, there was fire and there was smoke pouring out. And the smoke was because the presence of God had descended on the mountain in fire. And that itself was the opposite of nature, because normally fire doesn't burn downwards, it burns upwards. So in that, God is changing his nature, so to speak, or God is doing something against nature so that the lower world does something against nature as well. It's as if God is doing something against his nature so that we can do something against our nature. There is actually a passage in Tanya which talks about this. God, the very act of creation, is in a sense against the nature of the divine, because in order to create the world, there has to be a concealment of the divine. And so God conceals himself against his nature in order to create the world and us. And the request that comes to us is, we human beings have passions for this and for that and for the other, and we have to control those passions and serve God instead. So Ach tzarich lahavin, but we have to understand, that's line 10. Mahu hatam, what's the reason? Shebamatan Torah k'tiv, that in the giving of the Torah it says that Hashem yarad alav Hashem ba'esh. That means the previous Sedra Yitro, before the giving of the Torah. It says then, God descended on the mountain in fire, and it doesn't say consuming fire, it just says fire. Whereas in our parsha, the end of Mishpatim, it says, ke'esh ochedet, like a consuming fire. Why in one place earlier does it say fire, and here it says consuming fire? We also have to understand why in our Sedra, it doesn't explain what this smoke is. It doesn't say smoke, it just calls it cloud. Whereas before the giving of the Torah, it said Mount Sinai was smoking. There it uses the term smoke. Whereas in our Sedra, it says it was cloud, and it's only when we look in Rashi, then we see that it's smoke. So now comes a kind of discussion of the nature of smoke. But Yuvan Bahaktim Be'er Klalut Inyan HaShem. Now we can understand this by considering the nature of smoke, which comes from burning something in fire. When the fire is a very sort of gentle fire, a very pure fire, it unites with the thing, the physical thing, which being physical is not as pure and as simple, as it were, as the fire. And then the smoke comes from that physical object which is being burnt in the fire. And the smoke comes from the breaking down of the different aspects of the materiality of that object. And therefore, the physical things which are of a more gentle kind of materiality, they burn more quickly. And the smoke that comes out from them is more of a light smoke. But physical things which are heavy and thick and coarsely material, the fire catches them and burns, but the smoke that comes out of them is a very thick smoke. And the smoke itself is something thick. And so that means that in the smoke itself, you can see how thick and coarse the material is, which is burning and causing the smoke. And so that is seen with the way that the fire burns the object, burns it down, and there's this thick smoke which comes out of it. Okay, so can you see the image? Let's say if we were illustrating this, you would have this you know, a tire or something which is burning, or big pieces of wood burning with oily rags with a thick smoke, as opposed to burning something very light and simple, gossamer thing which just burns up and there's just a little puff of light smoke. So there we can understand this from the physical situation, which, as I mentioned before, is like a map of the spiritual dimension. So in spiritual terms, when we consider the thing, the way that things are effaced and become nullified in relation to the divine. So you see, the nature of existence is that we are physical beings and we're in a physical world. And a very important goal that we have is to reach some kind of contact with the divine, which comes about through a kind of self-nullification. Okay, a self-nullification to the divine. And when we consider the very word smoke, when we consider the word smoke, so now we're on page Zion and it's line one. So the word smoke, Ashan in Hebrew, Ayin, She, and Nun, which is an acronym for three words. Olam, the world, the universe, Shana, time, a year, time, V'nefesh, and the soul. So there's space, time, and the soul. That's the word smoke. As explained in Kabbalistic books and in the commentary by the Raivad, who was a Kabbalist as well as a Halachist, a commentary he wrote to the Book of Creation, Sefer Yetzirah. And so that smoke indicates the whole realm of downchaining of worlds, right? The whole realm of existence, whether it's first of all spiritual, then it becomes physical. And that's what it means, world, time, and the soul. And it's looking at it because smoke billows upwards. The way existence is moving upwards. And how does it move upwards? Because of the revelation of fire, which comes from above. Mipnei Asher Yarad Alav Hashem Be'esh, because God had descended on the mountain in fire, that's why the smoke is billowing upwards. And through that, the coarseness, the ego of the world, the Yeshut, Yesh means there is something there, and Yeshut means ego. The ego of existence is consumed. V'nase ba habitul, and there comes about in it a selflessness. V'hakilayon lelokut, a kind of expiry, a thirsting for godliness. Behind it, that means she'inyan ha'esh, that the idea of fire indicates a revelation from God, from above to below. And the smoke is the way in which the world reaches up from below to above towards the divine. And therefore, even after the world has made this step going upwards, but because the world is so coarse, nishar inyan shel afrurit ve'achrurit, there is left a kind of soot and dirt, kamo be'ashan ha'gashmi, like with physical smoke, that's, something is smoking, it stains things, it puts a deposit of soot and on everything. So we have the attempt of the world to reach upwards to this divine fire, this enticing, beautiful divine fire beyond. And the world bursts out in smoke, which is a coarse smoke because of the coarseness of the world. But even though the smoke is able to ascend, it leaves a kind of a sooty deposit. The chevan shatachlit de matan Torah, because the purpose of the giving of the Torah is to elevate the whole of the realm of the downchaining of the worlds, this ascent has to begin on the lowest level. You see, because the purpose is to elevate the whole of existence, so one has to begin the ascent on the lowest level. And that is the inanimate level, when we're talking about the four areas of existence, the human, the animal, the vegetable, and the inanimate. The inanimate is the lowest level. And there's a mashal to this. There's a kind of a parable, a metaphor. If you're trying to lift up a big stack of logs, let's say, there's a stack of logs, one on top of the other, and you're trying to lift them up. So you have to put the lever, the end of the lever, underneath the lowest log, and then you lift up the whole log. So here we have the word lever in this text. Now in Rabbi Shneur Zalman's discourses, that's from the end of the 18th century, beginning of the 19th century, we have this word lever. I was once giving a lecture on science and Hasidism. So this was one of the concepts that I focused on, the Hasidic image of a lever and the way it's used. That the idea of the lever is you put the lever at the lowest level, then you have a fulcrum. It's a Greek concept, right? That you have a fulcrum and then you press down on the other end of the lever and the lever lifts up what you're trying to lift up. Now, for the Greeks and the simple way we understand levers, the interesting thing is how much more you can lift up than by the unaided person. It's a very effective tool for lifting up a heavy weight. But what the Hasidic focus is, the way you have to put the end of the lever at the lowest point of the load you want to lift up. It's one of the images to explain the significance of practical action. Why the practical mitzvot are so important? Because the practical dimension of life and of the individual is the lowest dimension of the individual. And if one wants to elevate the individual, we have to put the lever down at the lowest part of our being, that's practical action, and lift that up. And then everything within the person is elevated at the same time. So here we're talking about elevating the world. And that means we have to go right down to the most coarse dimension of existence in order to try to elevate it. Because if we restrict ourselves to the more fancy and pleasant and aesthetically pleasing aspects of existence, which aren't so dirty and grimy, we won't lift up the whole thing. We'll only lift up the middle part. If you put the lever in the middle of the pile of wood, the logs, you'll only get the higher logs to lift up, but the lower logs will be left there as before. You have to put the lever right at the bottom. So here we have the idea of going right down to the lowest level and lifting that up. One second. So we're now looking So now the Rebbe in this discourse, he explains it in terms of the verses that we were looking at. So the thing is, we were looking at the time of the giving of the Torah, just before the giving of the Torah, compared with the verses at the end of our Sedra, which is after the giving of the Torah. So when it says that Mount Sinai was smoking, that's the time of the giving of the Torah. And since at the giving of the Torah, the divine revelation was in a way of coming from above to below, and the world was still physical and material, it had not yet been refined. So therefore, this revelation of the divine at the giving of the Torah, we're now moving on to page Chet. This revelation of the divine achieved the bittul v'kilyan olam, the nullification of the world in such a way that the mountain is smoking, a thick smoke which indicates the coarseness of the world. And the Rebbe suggests that's why it says the mountain was smoking because God had descended on it in fire, and it doesn't say consuming fire. And it implies that the smoke came from the fire itself, not from what it was burning. Because the situation of the world at the time, just before Matan Torah, it was so coarse that it couldn't even be burnt by this fire. It was too coarse. It was so coarse, the fire of spirituality wouldn't even penetrate it. Like a rock. No, in normal terms, it's very hard to set fire to a rock. And so therefore, the smoke was not so much from the mountain being transformed. Whereas when we come to the verse at the end of Al Sedra Mishpatit, where it's after the giving of the Torah, and there you have the image of the glory of God was like consuming fire at the top of the mountain. That's after the giving of the Torah, and it's after the world has been spiritually nullified in the moment of the giving of the Torah. The giving of the Torah was an incredible moment, an incredible time when the doors of perception were opened and the whole nature of existence was the spiritual was revealed, and so there was a permanent transformation in existence. And so after that, the world was not so coarse. And so therefore, in our verse, in our passage, after the giving of the Torah, it says the glory of God was like a consuming fire, because now the world is a little bit more edible, as it were, to this fire. It's a little bit more tender. It's a little bit more possible for the fire to permeate and consume the world in a positive way. And further, now this is on page Tet, line 2, and further, it didn't actually make smoke. When we come to this later stage, after the giving of the Torah, the fire, the divine fire, doesn't cause smoke in the ordinary sense. Because it is so subtle and delicate, it's not called smoke. It's called cloud. And that's why it says Moses went into the cloud. So it's not a matter of the world being it doesn't need the clouds, fire and smoke. Smoke would indicate that something is being burnt up. But at this stage, after the giving of the Torah, after this transformation of existence, where the voice of God came from north, south, east, west, from up and down, I am the Lord your God, everything was transformed. And so now when there's the consuming fire on the mountain, yes, it consumes, but the effect is cloud, not smoke, something more subtle. However, Anan Zeh, this cloud, Kamina Shanhu, is like a kind of smoke, as Rashi says. Because since this cloud, because Rashi includes a kind of Kabbalistic dimension as well as his analysis of the literal meaning of the Torah. And since the nature of this cloud is not a revelation of God from above, like the clouds that we see in earlier verses. But it's a cloud which comes, and I think by that he means the cloud we were talking about in last week's Sedra. At the end of that Sedra, we were talking about Moses going into the cloud, and that was really a divine revelation. But this cloud is from the glory of God, which is being revealed like a consuming fire. And that means that godliness is achieving a kind of a selflessness in the very existence of the world. And that's why Rashi says it's like a cloud, like fire, like smoke, sorry. It's like a kind of smoke. That in this cloud, there's also the idea of smoke, which means soot and something grimy, which comes from the combustion of a material thing, but it's much more subtle. And because the goal here, but the goal here, if people could mute these, I'll stop sharing the screen in a minute and we'll try and discuss this. So the goal is that to actually make the world, not only it should be a refined world, it should make the world should become a dwelling for the divine in the lower world. And therefore this cloud in which Moses has to come in order to receive the Torah, to receive the tablets of the law, with the Ten Commandments, and to bring them down below, this cloud is actually like a kind of smoke, because it's a revelation from above achieving a selflessness in the materiality of existing things. But since it's after the revelation of the giving of the Torah, which has purified everything to a certain extent, therefore it's not all smoking the way it was before, but instead of smoking it is a cloud. But Rashi tells us that cloud is has within it a quality of smoke. Now, the next paragraph is going to introduce all this in terms of our own service of the divine. But first of all, have we been able to follow this rather very graphic, beautiful imagery of Mount Sinai before the giving of the Torah, how there was a thick smoke which was burning. The thick smoke which is burning, and then we have the giving of the Torah, which is a certain kind of transformation of existence. And then we have our Sedra, where there's a revelation of God's fire. And this time the fire can consume the mountain, because the mountain is edel enough, it's delicate enough. It's delicate enough for the for it to be able to burn, and the effect of the burning makes a cloud rather than smoke. Although Rashi tells us actually this cloud is also a kind of smoke. Okay, so that's the imagery. Now, can we follow the imagery? Are we okay with it? Are there any questions? You're okay, Jeremy. Okay, so let me go a little bit further to translating this into terms of the person's relationship with the divine. And so that is section Dalet, which is on page 10. And what this means in terms of the individual service of God. You can have a person who claims, why should I have to deal with lower things? If there's some kind of necessity to go down, it's enough I should go down to things that are on the level, if we consider the four dimensions of existence, the human, animal, vegetable, mineral. I'll just go down a bit. I'll go down to the animal level, or maybe even to the vegetable level. But I'm not going to go down to the lowest level, to the inanimate level. In other words, to things which are so coarse that you don't see any life force in them at all. So much so that even when the fire of God, divine fire, is revealed to them, this thing is not a vessel to it, because the fire doesn't catch it. Okay, so what's he talking about here? What's the discourse talking about? At this moment, it's talking about interacting with other human beings. What kind of human beings are we going to relate to? Are we only going to relate to spiritual human beings? People who have a great sense of spirituality, and when they hear a spiritual teaching, it's very exciting for them, it's very moving, and something, I mean, that's an incredibly beautiful thing. But what about people who can't relate to spiritual things? What are we going to think about them? And how can we relate to them? It seems that they're completely closed up, perhaps. But nonetheless, what the discourse is saying is we have to be able to relate to everyone. We can't say, well, this is the line, I'm only going to go down so far. Of course, you know, people... I remember once having a discussion with a mathematician. And... I asked him what he was working on. He said, how do you expect me to explain to you, who are not a mathematician, how can I explain to you what I'm working on? So I didn't say it, but I felt like saying, look, a good mathematician can only explain things to other mathematicians, but a great mathematician can explain them to a child. So I didn't say it. And in the end, he did explain to me what he was working on, and it was very interesting. But so to what extent are we able to share spiritual ideas and the most significant aspects of life? What the discourse is trying to prompt us to feel is that in some sense, there are no limits. And it can be communicated to everyone. Now, that's very easy to say in this beautiful Aleph group, which is a few selected souls from different parts of the world who come together to study a Kabbalistic Hasidic discourse of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. You know, what about going on a bus and telling the bus conductor? the bus driver, and no conductors in. So what the Rebbe is saying, that we have to find a way. Not everyone can relate to a discourse of the Rebbe, and we have to find a way to communicate in such a way that other people can understand. So that's what it's about. It's about dealing with the lowest aspects of life. And that's where I think Ophir has gone now. He's in some other course, so he had to leave. But that concept of the evil which is in the world, you know, when the neat little public schoolboys in Lord of the Flies, and suddenly they're shipwrecked on this island, or they're this bestial animal dimension takes over. Well, we're in a world which has that nature. And what the Rebbe is trying to teach us to do is to be able to be in that world and have some contribution to make in that world. It's very interesting that among the different activities of Chabad around the world, drug rehabilitation has attracted the attention of quite a number of Lubavitch rabbis. I think Rabbi Lu's son-in-law, Rabbi Lipska, he's involved in that. We had here in London, Arya Safran ran the Chabad drugs line in Ilford.
Maxon Shalom Bear in Arizona.
Okay, that's good to know.
The shluchim who are near rehab places, especially, and then they study and they get qualified or something.
Very interesting. And I believe that part of the, now, you know, one doesn't like to exactly put it in this way, you know, but if you imagine a Litvisher Rosh Yeshiva kind of person, you know, a Torah scholar. So I think, yeah, drug rehabilitation, you know, it's a rachmonos, it's a terrible shame, a person's a drug addict, you know, I'm very pleased there are people who are dealing with it, but I you know, what's he going to understand? I'll tell him that there's an argument between Rashi and Tosafot. What will he understand? The Rebbe, in this discourse of 1965, and many similar, he's trying to train the Hasidim to understand that whatever there is in the world, we should be able to deal with that and to elevate it. Nothing is too grimy and sooty for a person to say, oh, it's too dirty for me to get my hands dirty. It's Hasidic teachings give one a protection. Now, here's the very interesting twist in the discourse, right? So we're coming to it now. Let's see the way the discourse presents it, which is a very beautiful, memorable concept. So here we are on this page, Yud. So we have to do the thing is, we have to be able to deal with the thing which is smoking and to lift it up. Even it to elevate it, even if it's on the inanimate level, the very lowest level, because that's the purpose of the giving of the Torah, that the concept of the smoke, which means the way the materiality of the world ascends, that we will do that not only on the vegetable level, but also on the mineral level. But a person might say, look, how can I do it? There's a phrase, there's just a simple graphic idea. If I deal with something where there's smoke, it'll maybe get dirty. Surely it's better I shouldn't be involved in it. And the answer to this, now this is a key concept, very beautiful, on line 11. Line 11 on page Yud. The reply to this, God made a pathway for Moses in the smoke. And that means that the quality of Moses, we're not talking here about only Moses, the leader of the Jewish people who got the Torah. We're talking about you and me. Because the quality of Moses in the soul of every individual Jew does not get dirty. It remains pure. And since it's going inside this pathway, because the soul is always faithful to God. As Rabbi Shneur Zalman said, every individual Jew, whoever it is, doesn't want and is not able to be separated from godliness. And as the Rambam says, that even if someone is so wicked that the Bet Din are trying to force him to do what he's supposed to do. This situation is, unfortunately, he's been a horribly abusive and cruel husband, and his wife wants a divorce from him, and he's refusing to give a divorce. And the Talmud and the Rambam say, well, the Bet Din should have him beaten until he agrees to give a divorce. Now, how can you have him beaten? Because a divorce has to be a free will action. So the way the Rambam explains it is his evil desire is not letting him give the divorce. But his deeper self wants to do whatever the Torah wants him to do. And since at this moment the Torah wants him to give a divorce, that's the right thing to do. And so that means that within, he is like a metaphor. This person is a metaphor for the inanimate rock. And in fact, so therefore, whoever one is dealing with, one can look at them in such a way that within them is this spark, this sacred spark of godliness. And that spark of godliness wants to keep the Torah in a proper way. So you don't have to be worried about getting dirty, because whoever you're dealing with, there is this tremendous purity there. It might be they're wearing strange clothes or not wearing strange, but within that there is a spark of holiness. And even more, it's actually not smoke at all. Remember, it's cloud, which Rashi says it's a kind of smoke. But really it's cloud, because in fact, even what looks very negative, if we look at it in a more inward way. There was a time when the Rebbe began talking about Greenwich Village. So from the vantage point of religious Brooklyn, Greenwich Village is like, the other pole of existence. And the Rebbe began speaking about how there are many Jewish people there and they have beards. He looked at what you might say the external dimension of Greenwich Village and said, look, you should appreciate it. And in fact, there were many people who spent time in Greenwich Village who ended up coming and spending time in Crown Heights and Lubavitch and going to yeshiva and becoming Baalei Tshuva. So, in other words, it's not really smoke. It's cloud. It's something more subtle than smoke. Because the concealment of the world, the way the world conceals godliness, it's only a kind of existence. And the reason why there's this existence which conceals godliness is so that there should be bechira, free will. Because if we could see the truth all the time, there wouldn't be any kind of free will whatsoever. And the Rebbe tells a story, a famous story of the Berdachever Rav, the great Hasidic leader who was a friend of Rabbi Shneur Zalman. The Rebbe of Berdachev, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak of Berdachev. And he says, what does God want of the Jewish people? The idea that there is the Garden of Eden, he hid that in books. The coarse desires of the world, he puts that in front of everyone. So what does God expect? We're caught up in this problem that here are these tangible negative desires and the beautiful reward of the Garden of Eden is hidden away in a book, in the Talmud, the Zohar. So the Rebbe is saying that the reason why there's this concealment is so that the individual should strive for a more deep inner service of the divine. And in fact, since the concealment is for a sacred purpose, its true nature is holiness. And that's why it's cloud and not smoke. So even though it looks like smoke, like something very material. And that even after it's burnt, there's still soot or dust. But that is only what it looks like to human eyes. In an inner dimension, this is a cloud of holiness, because the whole purpose is simply to add radiance of holiness. That's what it's for. And now we've got the last paragraph. And that's what it means. Moses came into the cloud. Moses, our teacher, and similarly, all in every individual Jew, there is the quality of Moses in our souls, receives the Torah And after that introduction of Moses going into the cloud, and the cloud is like smoke, and so therefore we need to have a pathway in the smoke, and that means we have to come and to pass through this cloud, and it's through this that we receive the Torah. And even though temporarily, in an external way, it's a matter of concealment, nonetheless, through this, we come to Moses being on the mountain, as we read at the very beginning from the Torah. Moses was on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. And the sages tell us when it says day, it means he was studying the written Torah. When it says night, he was studying the oral Torah, like the Mishnah and the Talmud and all the different aspects of Torah. And that means we receive the Torah in its completeness. And after that, this is extended to every single individual in that person's body and their physical body and their portion in the world, the home they live in, the clothes they have, other things they use. As it says, after Parshat Mishpatim, we have the next Parsha, Truma. And in Truma, it says, they should make for me a sanctuary and I'll dwell in them. And that means the sanctuary inside every individual Jew. As the sages point out, it doesn't say make for me a sanctuary and I'll dwell in it, but it says in them, in every single individual. And also not only the spiritual sanctuary inside each person, but the literal sanctuary, the temple to be built in Jerusalem. And that's built of physical things, silver, gold, and silver. And from that, there comes a sanctuary for the divine. And through that, there is achieved the purpose for which God desired that he would have a dwelling in the lower world. Thank you very much.